Let's do it.
Rolls out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we are very, very happy to introduce you to a special guest. Okay, he's not really a guest. It's QB1 JR. He's come back to us. JR, what's going on, my man? How you doing? How you been?
You know, I needed a couple days off to just recover from some things that's happened the past few days. But I had a good birthday, and I'm back now, so I'm good.
All right, all right. The missus have a good birthday, too?
Yes, yeah, she did.
Word, word. And, of course, next in line, we have wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. What's going on, Miles?
Hey, not much. Just getting that cookie shirt. I got that ordered.
Miles represents Team Petty. And the fourth member of our team is somewhere. He'll be joining us eventually, but as you you've listened to the show for any amount of time now, you figure that our man, the Saxy Prince, sometimes is in a he fights a losing battle against the clock, and we just had to get going this evening. So we're gonna go ahead and jump into the show. When Yankee gets here, he'll jump in and join us, and we'll find out which adventures have kept him away from us this evening. So we got caught up on JR. JR, you mentioned that you've been recovering from some things here over the last couple of days. Yeah, what's been going on? You know, like, were you keeping up with the NBA Finals while you weren't talking to us?
Yeah, you know, everybody knows I'm a big LeBron fan, and I thought they had a chance in the series, but proved to be wrong, and Kevin Durant has finally crowned a champion. I can't call him my famous nickname, Kevin Second Place Durant, anymore. And, you know, I'm happy for him and the Golden State Warriors. They had a hell of a season and played a hell of a series, so they deserved it.
Mr. Gorham, I guess any final thoughts from you on how the series went? And I guess the follow-up question that I'll start with Miles and then, you know, JR, you can jump in, is kind of where do we go from here? I know a lot of people have been saying that, you know, we expect these two teams to kind of go back and forth for a while. I guess, what kind of moves do you see Cleveland making? What do you see the Warriors doing? What are your final thoughts on the finals and kind of where we go from here in the NBA, Miles?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the finals, personally, I thought that's kind of how it was going to go. I didn't think it – I thought it would push to more, you know, six or seven games, but I did think the Warriors were going to win. I thought, you know, that the Durant played out of his mind in the finals. He was not about to let that team lose. So you could see it in his eyes every game. He pretty much put that team on his back. So everybody that gave him kind of the, you know, hopping on that bandwagon. Like he even said, you know, check the numbers, because he's the one carrying the team. It wasn't, you know, Curry. It wasn't Clay. Wasn't any of those guys. It was him. So I think, you know, he did his thing, and I'm really happy for him. Really happy. I thought it was a really good series, and like we've talked about, and like they've said on Twitter, it was the most watched finals in I don't know, maybe ever, if not ever, then a long time at least. I don't know the numbers exactly in front of me, but and then where I think they move from here, I mean, they got to re-sign quite a bit of players. I think most of their bench, I think, are free agents, are going to be soon to be free agents. So guys like Andre Iguodala, he's an important one, I think, to lock up, because he's a perfect like six man, or, you know, they start him or not. He plays that really good defensive role and complimentary player to kind of what they're trying to do. And so I think it'll be tough for them to kind of re-sign all those players, especially since I think Curry's a free agent. So they're going to have to lock him up. I mean, he's going to get paid. So they're going to have to move some things around to kind of appease that. For Cleveland, though, I know you've been in the favor of kind of changing the mold of what they do and, you know, potentially trading a guy like Kyrie for a DeMarcus Cousins in that role, or, you know, kind of slowing the pace down and getting, you know, the bigger bodies in there for a team like Cleveland to kind of counter the fast-moving, you know, Warriors. But I don't know if I'm feeling that. I think Kyrie's too good to get rid of, but I think it'll be tough for them they have to bring in somebody to kind of team. I just don't know who it could be at this point, because you'd have to you basically have to give up one of those, you know, Love or Kyrie to kind of get one of those big name players. I just don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, JR? You're the resident LeBron fan. Like, what is Cleveland going to do? I mean, you know, if they have LeBron, they pretty much are all but guaranteed to get through the East. What moves do you think they can make to get over the hump of whatever team it is they face coming out of the West?
You know, I really don't know, honestly. There's no combination of players in the NBA that they possibly can fit in their salary cap situation, which is brutal right now, that it can help them overcome the Warriors, in my opinion. One thing that they can do is attempt to get Carmelo Anthony without giving up Kevin Love, which I think is nearly impossible, and it's kind of redundant considering they are the same type of player. But another move that a lot of people really aren't thinking about that would tremendously help him if he's cleared to play, adding a guy like Chris Bosh. You know, he's a guy that can be a stretch four. He can come off the bench considering the situation. He can't play a heavy amount of minutes, and he gives you another score off that bench in that second unit. So Chris Bosh could be another added piece to the puzzle, and he probably wouldn't cost a lot right now. He'd probably be really cheap just because of his blood clot situation, and we all know what happened with that, with him and Pat Riley and the Heat and him being no longer a member of them. So, and we all know him and LeBron have a great relationship, so maybe he would take a discount to join them. So he could be another added piece to the puzzle, but, I mean, everybody says Paul George, but, I mean, what can they really give up to get him, and why would Indiana give him up to an Eastern Conference foe that they would have to face every year? Why would Larry Bird, well, he's not there anymore, excuse me, why would the Pacers help them out, a team that they're trying to overcome? So there really isn't a player out there that I think can help them get over the hump of the Warriors, but maybe Carmelo, maybe Chris Bosh can help supplement that bench or something like that. So there really isn't much they can do at this point.
And JR, if you were a betting man and you had to put money down, is LeBron starting for Cleveland at the start of the 2018 season?
I don't think so. Just because he sees the light at the end of the tunnel for this run with the Cavs. They're in salary cap hell. They're paying Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith up until 2021 or 2022, something like that. So they both have extremely long contracts. Kyrie is going to be Kyrie. He's going to get better every year, and I think he's only 24 or 25 years old. So he always has a running mate in Kyrie. But LeBron is entering year 15, I believe it is, next year. And he knows he's getting older, and he's at the point now where he's talking about being an NBA owner and being a billionaire and improving his brand. So he probably wants to go to a big market. And what bigger market than Los Angeles? And I think it'll either be the Lakers or the Clippers. I don't know which one it would be. The Lakers have a tremendous amount of assets right now. We know they have a lot of young pieces. So maybe they can ship some of those guys off to trade for some superstars to help supplement LeBron. And we know LeBron and Chris Paul are really good friends. And if CP3 does stay there in LA with the Clippers, maybe he goes and plays with them. So he has a lot of options. And I think he ends up playing for the Clippers or the Lakers. I don't really know which one right now.
So, Miles, I guess in your opinion, like, how does that play if LeBron leaves? I mean, JR mentioned that they're in salary cap hell. I mean, if memory serves, I mean, Tristan's represented by LeBron's people. Like, they got these guys' contracts that seem way over market. And then, I guess, how do you see that playing if he bounces after the season to search for greener pastures?
I mean, without LeBron, Cleveland doesn't have a basketball team, in my opinion. Nobody really follows him. Nobody cares about him. LeBron is that team. LeBron's that state. So, like you saw, like when you went to Miami, I mean, nobody cared about the Cleveland Cavaliers after that. They all transitioned over to Miami Heat fans. So that's kind of the move. Wherever LeBron goes, his running team goes. You know, you saw that commercial he's running. The commercial where he's running, all the people are following him. That's exactly what it is. Everybody just follows LeBron wherever he goes. So without a bad of an eye either. So that's just kind of how it plays out. I mean, LeBron basically got those guys paid knowing that he can leave, you know, in a couple of years. He went all in and said, let's get these guys paid. Let's make a run at these titles. You know, he got the one for Cleveland. So that kind of expunges anything he has to do moving forward. But at the same time, I mean, he knew what he was doing. LeBron knew, you know, if we don't win, I'm leaving at some point anyways. So he kind of got his boys paid. I don't know if he did that intentionally or what, but he got his boys paid. Everybody's taken care of. So, I mean, he'll always move on to greener pastures. So I'm not I don't really think too much of it, to be honest.
Yeah, LeBron's definitely going to the Homeboy Hall of Fame. He took care of all his people. Yeah,
definitely.
Took care of everybody in Cleveland. So I guess none of them would be upset with him. It'd be interesting to see what the reaction from the city will be after he did bring them a championship, if they if they've learned anything from the last time, if they're still just as salty as they were the first time he left.
I don't think people could be as mad anymore just because he did win them that championship like he promised. I mean, even if it is ends up only being one, it's more than they've ever had. So I think he's done enough to kind of appease that.
He doesn't know Cleveland anything.
If I was a better producer and knew how to kind of insert sounds and things in right now, I would run the breaking news sound to let all the listeners know that the one and only Saxy Prince has joined us this evening. Yanka, what's going on,
y'all?
How you doing, my brother?
Good. Just, you know, had a video audition I needed to get done, so apologize for being late, but I'm here.
Famous people.
Not yet.
I mean, this is a perfect time, though, since you're here. You just came from an audition. I was going to talk about it anyway, but Yanka, since, you know, I feel like you like to put us on the spot with the Yanka's random question and bringing up Miles' lockdown cornerback skills and things of that sort. What I'd like you to do, since you just joined us here, is to tell us about this web series that you got going on, Theater People.
Oh, yeah.
While they should watch you in another medium that you perform in.
Theater People is something we shot last. So basically, a friend of mine, she basically just had me in this post, and they, you know, essentially needed a black person for the show. And I, you know, I went to audition. I met with the guy. He was super cool. The director was awesome. And I got casted for it. I'm not really much of a theater buff at all, so I was kind of walking in with a lot of people who had more theater experience, and I had more commercial TV and film experience. So it was definitely unique. We shot for about 4 or 5 months, probably 3 months straight, and then we did some pickup shots and stuff. But more about the show. The show was absolutely hilarious. Matt, the director, super funny. We have six of the main kids or the college student characters. Myself, who's a grad student, who's still part of like this touring theater college troupe. And then you have the main characters, two more main characters, Elise and Beth. And they're both there, and they kind of just oversee, me and the other two oversee like this group and stuff. So we're just kind of getting ready for this giant performance towards the end of the season. It's on episode 2 right now. We come out every Monday for the next 8 weeks. And the rest of the cast just got introduced in episode 2. You'll meet my character, Nick, very eccentric, very happy about all things theater. Kind of an awkward guy. You'll notice that very quickly. He's very smart, very intelligent, but at the same time, he's just very awkward. Like I said, so you'll see that very much so. And he just kind of makes offhand comments that he doesn't actually understand the impact. And the last thing about him, he just nothing affects him, really. So he's always kind of that positive guy, even though people are just clearly making fun of him. So
not much change.
Yeah, man. There's
acting going on.
I'm just basically being myself. It's based on me. No, okay. I had to. Funny thing is that. Oh, yeah. You can go. We actually just partnered with, for this season, there's actually 3 previous seasons of the show. I'm not part of any of those. And really, most of the cast isn't part of any of those. It's just the main two who were main character, Elise, and then her stage manager. But you can find it on, it's called Sika TV. It's a new online web series platform for a lot of independent film and TV stuff. So go to Sika TV. You can log in through your Facebook, all that stuff. I've posted some links and whatnot. So yeah, there's plenty of places you can find it. But if not, just Google Theater People web series and you'll find it.
Well, all right then. Well, welcome to tonight's pod. We'll throw the info for your show in the show notes so folks can check it out and see our man Saxy Prince playing Nicodemus. And we were just here talking about LeBron James NBA Finals, LeBron's legacy. Put JR on the spot on whether he thinks LeBron will be playing in Cleveland to start the 2018 season. All of us seem to be on the same page there in terms of particularly LeBron's bouncing out of Cleveland in just a little bit here after he's able to once again. But we have a little bit of time here before our guest is going to come on. So I guess we can transition because we were talking LeBron, talking finals, and there was a really cool video that came out with LeBron, Draymond, kind of talking in the barbershop. And one of the conversations they were bringing up is who's the GOAT athlete, greatest athlete of all time. And obviously we kind of had a little bit of quick back and forth on it, but I'll transition over to Miles here because this was really the topic that you brought to us and wanted to have a quick conversation on. So Miles, why don't you set the stage for us?
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool video, LeBron and Draymond and those guys talking about the greatest athlete of all time. You know, doesn't matter what sport, you know, just the greatest athlete of all time. And I know the name Tom Brady came up because, you know, we coined the term GOAT a lot for a lot of people. And I know Tom Brady came up in the conversation in this video, and he had mentioned that he doesn't think football players, especially a quarterback, shouldn't be considered like the greatest athlete of all time, mainly just because, you know, he plays the quarterback position. He doesn't have to play defense. He's not always taking the hits. And just kind of what it entails to kind of be an athlete. You don't have to be quite as good of an athlete to play the quarterback position. And, you know, he'd mentioned basketball as being more of the, you have to play both ends of the court. And you have to do a lot kind of more than what you would in some other sports like football, for example. So he kind of debunked kind of the Tom Brady as the GOAT. And he didn't reference himself as the greatest athlete of all time, but I think there's kind of that like notion that he could potentially be that. And to kind of parlay into that, for me personally, if I'm going to say who I think the greatest athlete of all time is, guy, girl, anybody, for me, it's Serena Williams personally.
Damn.
I think she's the greatest athlete of all time, hands down. I think she could be dudes. I don't think it matters. I think she's just so good at what she does. She's so dominant. And everything she does since she was, I think like what, like 16 years old. So she's just doing her thing and she doesn't even seem to be slowing down. So I'd say personally Serena. So I don't know about any of you guys.
Yeah, Prince, you haven't had much airtime today. What are your thoughts? Who's the greatest athlete of all time for yourself, not named Adrian Peterson or Teddy Bridgewater?
Oh, those two are definitely not the greatest athletes of all time. I was going to say Serena Williams just because I think her dominance has clearly spoken over multitudes of – she could just, like Miles said, could face man, woman, alien, anybody and just dominate them. I'll probably go this another route. I'll probably have to go with a guy who, you know, he definitely dominated at least one sport, but we obviously got to see him in other sports, which is what we often don't see with a lot of athletes nowadays. I'll probably have to go with Michael Jordan. You know, you got to see him obviously dominate the league, the NBA for what it was. And then, you know, you saw him have the capability of going to some of these other sports. I mean, he didn't obviously do as well in those other sports as he did in the NBA, but I just think obviously having that athleticism that he had, he was able to transition it to, you know, baseball and golf. And who's to say he couldn't gone to play, you know, football for all we know. So my second would probably be Michael Jordan.
All right, what about you, J.R.?
Disappointed in y'all, man.
Oh boy.
Disappointed. So y'all know, or everybody knows, I'm a Florida State fan. And I'm not being a homer at all.
Dion.
I'm doing the tomahawk chop right
Prime
now.
Time.
Tomahawk chop right now. Prime time, baby. The best
Prime
athlete
time.
Who ever lived. Not only was he the best athlete who ever lived, he probably was the most arrogant and cocky one as well. I mean, this guy, he ran with 4.2 at the combine and backed it up with his play. 53 career interceptions in the NFL. Then went over to the major leagues and had 308 runs scored and played in the World Series. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. This guy told the New York Giants at the draft, after they told him to learn the playbook, he said, no, I'm going to be gone by the time y'all pick me. So ain't no need for me to learn that.
He for real did stuff that you see some of the new athletes doing now, you know, not working out for certain teams like the NBA.
Yeah.
Deion was the inventor of that. He was like, I'm not working out for you. You know I'm going to go top five.
Yeah, I mean, he just had the swagger and everything to back it up. So Deion was – he's one of my favorite athletes of all time, and I think he's one of the best pure athletes who ever lived.
It's a good one. Jason, how about you?
Definitely can't argue with any of the ones. I'm going to go a little bit different vein. It's a contemporary person, but I'm gonna go with Usain Bolt. Maybe it's maybe reaching back to the heritage a little bit and being a homer for the Jamaicans, but just the way – everyone can run. Everybody can run. You know, people have been sprinting forever, but just the way this dude has been able to come out and just completely just destroy and dominate his contemporaries and shatter all records and really just be in a class completely of his own and such a highly competitive thing, you know, that is sprinting since he basically burst onto the scene. I put him up there towards the top. I'm with Miles. I think Serena in terms of athletes, especially that I've seen, probably the most dominant athlete that I've watched for an entire career. But if I'm thinking of someone a little bit further down the list, Usain Bolt would probably be my pick just because of how far ahead of his competition he's been throughout his entire run.
Yeah, definitely. Probably the greatest runner we've ever seen in the history of of sprinting in the Olympics. So that's definitely a good one. I think I'll just to end this little cycle here real quick, I think a couple other names that kind of – we could mention our like guys like Michael Phelps and you can't forget about Bo Jackson. I think Bo Jackson is kind of in that realm of Deion Sanders, but on like kind of the offensive side of the ball. Obviously the injury kind of really, really hurt everything he could have done and what we could have seen for his entire career, but he'd probably be the other guy I'd consider just because of how good he was at baseball and football. So
any other guys for you, JR, Prince?
I mean, we pretty much named everybody I had on my list. Prince Adrian Peterson doesn't count.
Hey, real quick, where does like a LeBron James stand for you guys in terms of athletes of all the greatest athletes of all time?
He's definitely top 10. I mean, the only issue, obviously, LeBron. I mean, I would have loved to see LeBron, you know, take like a year or two and go play football, you know. When he wasn't winning in Cleveland, before he went to Miami, I wanted to see him just go play football for like a year or two.
I don't think he could do that.
But why would you wish that on him with his guaranteed contracts that he's getting for? I mean, like you got like last summer you had dudes like Tyler Johnson making more money than top quarterbacks. Like, why would you ever wish football on somebody who had basketball as an option?
What's even funnier is 3/4 of our listeners are like, who's Tyler Johnson?
Right.
But that man's making more money than the quarterback.
Was
like,
who was Tyler Johnson when they announced that contract? I had to hit Google to find out.
Team light skin.
For real. Syracuse.
Oh, man. Well, we were going to talk minicamp for a little bit. I guess, is there anything, any blazing hot takes? Nothing really huge seemed to come out of minicamp outside of Zim talking about maybe giving up some responsibilities. But I think we'll have to get to that on the next pod because our guest was able to get out a little bit early. So I'm going to go ahead and see if we can get them on and start talking a little bit of dynasty football here. Get everyone ready and prep for this upcoming Climb in the Pocket Dynasty League we're about to kick off. So just bear with us for just a minute.
JR finally signed up for
him. Yeah, JR finally signed up. We're not going to say he was shook, but, you know, he finally signed up. So bear with us 1 second, and we'll get our guest for you in just a minute here. All right, well, we are pleased to introduce a special guest to you. We have Mr. Jake Anderson. Find him on Twitter at NFL Draft Talker. Is that right, Jake?
Yeah, that is correct. NFL Draft Talker.
Awesome, awesome. And Jake is here because, like myself, Jake is a dynasty football enthusiast. And so we brought him on because we're starting a new dynasty league here and wanted Jake to really give us some background on what dynasty is, some strategy. But before we get to all that, Jake, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a born and bred Minnesotan. I lived in Minnesota until I was 23 years old. And then I moved out to Aspen, Colorado. I lived there for 5 years. And now I've been out in Long Island, New York for just over 3.5 years now. I'm a golf pro by trade, so I'm a golf instructor. That's what I do for a career. And I've been playing fantasy football for about 14 years now. And I just got into Devy and Dynasty 2 years ago. And ever since I got, you know, started with Dynasty football, you know, redraft just doesn't cut it anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Once you get in and get hooked to the team building and all the different ways you can go about setting up your team and the fact that, you know, your decisions and your mistakes are things that you have to keep dealing with and figuring out how to work around for the future in the coming years. And for all of us who think we know a little something about football, it really does put that to the test because you have to build teams and really see who knows what about what. So kind of with that segue there, I guess, can you give us a bit of an introduction? Like, what is Dynasty? What's the difference between Dynasty and kind of that traditional, I guess, you know, redraft, as you said, format that most people are familiar with for fantasy football?
Sure. And I think that's where most people get started is with redraft. And the difference between redraft and Dynasty is, I mean, it's really a completely different world. And Dynasty football is you draft your team and you have that same roster that carries over from year to year. So it's a never ending fantasy football endeavor, which is, you know, it's incredibly fun. In the off season, you do your rookie drafts, and that's just dependent on how you place that year in the draft. You know, trading and waiver wires, usually you have pretty deep rosters in dynasty leagues. So, you know, you usually can't rely on the waiver wire a whole lot. You kind of have to build your team through the draft and through trades, and trading is a year-round process. And I think that's a beautiful thing of it. It's just like the NFL, there's no offseason. And you're not just kind of living and dying with that single year, like a redraft.
So for guys like Miles and JR who are already hooked on the scouting piece of it, I guess, how do those things work together? Because you mentioned, I mean, you guys in Devy leagues, like someone like JR, already scouting guys who are in the 2018 draft to figure out where they fit, and in some cases, adding them to your teams right now. How does that scouting link in? Or are you more of a kind of a tape analysis guy? Are you an analytics guy? Like, how do you go about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm primarily a tape guy. I'm really trying to get into analytics and metrics a little bit. I just don't think that
it's not fun. Kind
of fits how I function as much. You know, I love watching tape, and I love watching players on draft breakdown. Like I've said before on other podcasts, I'm not a huge college football fan. But I've always been an NFL draft fan, so that gets me to pay attention to certain players more than necessarily watching full games of teams. And I think if you like the NFL draft and you like scouting players, then a Devy Dynasty Football League is right up your alley.
So with that said, I want to transition and get, you know, JR and Miles back in here, because one of the things I know you guys spent a good bit of time doing is scouting players and talking about the guys that we need to be paying attention for the upcoming college season or for next year's draft. So I figured we transition to QB1 here and let him tell us what quarterbacks in next year's kind of college class are the ones that we should really be paying attention to for the college football season, the NFL draft, and then obviously as we get into to rookie drafts and things for next year, who are the guys that are going to be leading the way?
Well, everyone knows the top guy, and that's Sam Darnold, the quarterback from USC. He's got a lot of comparisons to Tony Romo pre-draft. That actually was my pre-draft comparison for him. Very good player. Still a bit of an unknown to this point. He's only played 9 games. I think they started off, I believe, 1-2 or 1-3 or something like that. He came in the rest of the season and really had a remarkable season. Ended up winning in double overtime, 52-49 against Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and he had a tremendous game and a lot of tremendous throws, but he's going to be a polarizing prospect, and that's because of his release. You know, a lot of people like to talk about quarterbacks' releases and their release point, and, you know, it does make a difference, especially in all 3 levels of the field, short, intermediate, and deep throws. So He makes a lot of throws in the short to intermediate areas. In my opinion, it doesn't really affect his timing a lot. But, you know, draft Twitter has to have something to talk about with top prospects. So Sam Darnold is definitely a guy to watch out for. And I think he's going to be a good player on Sundays, but he's still a unknown at this point. And we'll see how he does this year. So I'm really excited to see him play. The next guy is, for me, is Josh Rosen. I absolutely love him. I love his film. He's a bigger guy than Sam Darnold. Stature-wise, he's about 6'4", about 215 to 220 pounds. In my opinion, he's a splitting image of Matt Ryan. Very good in the pocket. Tremendous mechanics. And the biggest thing with Josh Rosen right now is just his intangibles. Everybody hears about the off-field reports and how immature he can be at times. We've seen the pictures of him in the he had a bathtub or a swimming pool, excuse me, in his dorm room with a couple girls in there with him. So everybody knows about the intangible problems that he has had, but he's a really good player. He's coming off shoulder surgery this offseason, so he still has a lot to prove to this point. He needs to get his completion percentage up too as well. I think it was around 56 or 57%. So there's still a lot of things he needs to improve, and his progressions as well. The ball comes out late at times, and he doesn't really see the field well from time to time. So there's a couple of things he needs to improve, but he's definitely a first-round prospect. And I think as long as he keeps his nose clean and stays out of trouble, he'll hear his name very early in 2018. The next guy is Josh Allen from Wyoming. He's a guy that he's Bleacher Report, Matt Miller, he loves him. I think in the scout notebook this morning, he said a scout said that he's the best quarterback he's ever seen. So he has a rocket for an arm. It's like a rocket launcher is attached to his shoulder. But the biggest thing for him, he needs to improve his accuracy and decision-making a ton. That's the biggest thing with him right now. But he has all the talent in the world as far as arm talent. But there's a lot of things that he needs to clean up. And he's a guy that's going to hear his name early as well. He has a lot of upside. That's the biggest thing with him. But he's a very good player, in my opinion. But I think he's being a little bit overhyped right now just because of his strong arm. And it's kind of the same thing I said every year. If you have a strong arm, you're going to get looked at. We've seen it with Patrick Mahomes coming out of nowhere this year. So if you have a strong arm, you'll get looks. Then the last guy I think you should be looking out for is Lamar Jackson, the Heisman winner from this past season. There's a lot of reports coming out saying he's not a quarterback, so to speak. He's better as a wide receiver. But in my opinion, I think he could be a quarterback on Sundays. He goes through progressions well. He sees the field well. He's a tremendous athlete. Everybody knows that. But the biggest thing for Lamar is that he needs to improve his deep accuracy, and he needs to learn when to put touch on the ball as well. You see a lot of short to intermediate throws where he's throwing it as hard as he possibly can. So he really doesn't have a good feel for the position as far as when to put touch on the ball and just knowing when to how to throw certain throws. You don't have to throw every throw a million miles an hour, and that's what you see a lot of times with him. So those are the four top guys I think you should be looking out for.
Awesome. Jake, Miles, you agree? Anyone else that you'd want to add, or you guys think JR pretty much nailed it there with his list?
Yeah, for me, just another guy I've watched so far to this point, Luke Falk from Washington State. I kind of like what he's got going on. Again, this is really early in the process, but I think his decision making and ability to read the field has been pretty good from what I've seen. So he's another guy I think to keep an eye on.
Cool. Anyone else from you, Jake?
I think JR pretty much said everything that I would have said. And to be honest with you, coming from a dynasty angle and a Devy angle and a Vikings angle, I would say quarterback is a very difficult position to, you know, kind of figure out, especially earlier on before they're really going through the draft evaluation of the current year that where they're actually coming out and going through the combine and going through interviews and we get a little more dirt on these guys. I think it's tough to tell that transition how they're gonna, you know, come into the, and so unless the Vikings need a quarterback, or I mean that's really the only time I dive really hard into quarterbacks, because I don't really invest a whole lot into quarterbacks unless I'm playing in a super flex league, dynasty wise, where you have the option to start two quarterbacks. And even then, I think it's risky to invest high equity into a college quarterback, just because you never know. And I think JR was right on there with the top four guys there.
Yep, that makes a ton of sense there. But I know a position that does tend to transition a little bit easier to the NFL, and is also usually a little bit easier to spot early in the process is the running back position. And I know that, you know, you were on another pod recently where you kind of jumped into that position a little bit as well. I guess, who are the guys from your perspective that we should be looking out for at the running back position for next year's class?
Yeah. There's a long list here, and I think it's pretty clear at this point that there's a consensus too. And, you know, it's kind of whatever flavor you like here. And it's Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis. Saquon Barkley out of Penn State and Darius Geis out of LSU. Barkley has proven more. You know, he's been the workhorse there for quite a while. I think he's a complete back. You know, he's elusive, he's powerful, he's quick, he's got speed, he can catch the ball. Darius Geis is just a hammer. You know, it was a goal of a back type of running back. So I think they're both going to go high in the NFL draft next year. I prefer Barkley just because I've seen more on him, and I trust what I've seen. And I think Geis still has to prove some things. Since Fournette was there, he didn't get a whole lot of opportunity. And then, of course, you have Nick Chubb. You know, 2 years ago, everyone thought he was going to be the next big thing. He's been injured, he's been hurt, and he hasn't been able to stay on the field to show what he can do. But when he has been on the field, he's shown up, and he's shown that, you know, he can compete at a high level at the college level, at least. I like him. I think he's, you know, it's going to come down to his medical, and this is a big year for him to see if he can take over that backfield and dominate, because that Georgia backfield is a little bit crowded. And then one of my favorite running backs next year would be Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State. This guy, they wanted to play him at linebacker. He is an absolute – I always say he's a freight train. And this guy, for how big he is, he can catch the ball like a wide receiver. He's elusive. Again, you see him absolutely trucking some DBs in college, and it's embarrassing for those guys. I know it's DBs, but I mean, he can put a hood in on the linebacker as well. I love Ballage. He's one of my favorite just prospects, and I've fallen in love with him watching him. And then a little bit down the line, well, I think a little bit of a sleeper that I think actually JR was actually doing some work on was Akram Wadley out of Iowa. He's a little bit undersized, but I think his elusiveness is fun to watch. He's one of my favorite guys to watch on tape. The question, and I think he runs bigger than his size is, which I like out of a smaller back. So anytime you get that elusive smaller back, and they can deliver a punch and run up the middle, in between tackles. Those are some of my favorites. And, you know, it's a deep back. I could probably talk for another hour on the running backs next year. But I'll just touch on those and see if JR or Miles or any of you guys have any thoughts on any of these other running backs.
Well, before we get to their thoughts, we have to once again let the people know that the man, the myth, the legend,
he's back.
Prince has returned to us yet again. And of course, he would come back during a running back discussion. As soon as he said running back, Yinka just bing, popped up. Yeah.
I have a phone alert that goes off every time a running back conversation is happening. So,
yeah, so JR, Miles, Yinka, now that you're back, I guess, do you have any thoughts on what Jake had to say about those 2018 running backs you should be paying attention to?
He definitely hit the nail on the head in the top two. We knew Geis and Barkley were the top two. I'm a big Barkley guy. Like you said, I think he's probably my number one right now, based off everything we've seen from this past season for him. I think a guy to keep an eye on is LJ Scott from Michigan State. I'm a big fan of his. I think there's a lot of – I do think there's some Le'Veon Bell to his game. I mean, it only makes sense that coming from the same school, kind of used in a similar way. Bigger body, but a guy that can kind of do a little bit more than what you think he should based off his size. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a guy to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, you guys mentioned some really good ones. Of course, Geis and Barkley are the top two, but I think these guys kind of forgotten. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of him, but I think he's more of a down-the-line guy that can be a good mid-round pick, and that's Royce Freeman from Oregon. I believe he got hurt last year. I'm not sure exactly what he injured, but he's a guy that kind of fell off the map because he didn't end up declaring for the draft when many thought he should have, but I thought he made the right decision going back just because I don't think he was ready. But he's a guy to keep an eye on. Another one is Bo Scarborough from Alabama, who's another big back that a lot of people should keep an eye on as well. So those two are more down-the-line guys as opposed to a Geis Barkley, Wadley, or LJ Scott. So just keep an eye on Bo Scarborough and Royce Freeman.
Prince, you got any running back takes for us?
I'm glad that JR had mentioned Bo Scarborough because he's a guy that I kind of have on my radar from what I saw last year. So he's one of the backs that I'm definitely keeping an eye on in 2017.
All right. And with that, we're going to transition to the last position that is really a fantasy relevant one, or one that anyone really does a ton of early work on. That's the wide receiver position. So Miles, we know, you know, when you're not locking down Adam Thielen, that your preferred craft where you, were out there really doing it all was a wide receiver. So let us know, who are the wide receivers that you're looking at going into 2018?
Yeah. So I've started to dive into a few guys. I haven't, obviously gone into everybody. So I haven't really touched on a guy like Cortland Sutton. I know he's kind of the consensus number one heading into the season. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan of him. I know he's kind of plays more of that. He's more of like a tight end to me, the way he plays. I mean, the dude just out muscling everybody, teams like, me and Jay are talking earlier, like teams like Kansas, he's not really going up against top tier talent. And I really don't think he's going to test all that well. I do think he's going to continue to get all that steam, and he's going to put up big numbers next year just because of where they play and kind of how they feature him. So he's definitely the consensus number one. Again, I haven't really gone really deep into him, but for me right now, my number one that I've watched right now is Antonio Callaway from Florida. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's just a dynamic playmaker all over the field, punt return, kick returns, screens, deep, intermediate. I think he does it all. I think he's really underrated, and I really think the biggest thing that he's going to factor this year, and we're going to see him get some help, is with Malik Zaire from the transfer from Notre Dame. I think he's going to really help a guy like Antonio Callaway kind of get put on the map, and see him get kind of more of that, where Jason throws in the analytics, the team shares and the target shares for the team. And I think he's really going to benefit from that. Another guy, I mean, I think everybody knows him because you watch Alabama a lot, I'm sure, because they're always on TV. But Calvin Ridley, he's a technician. He's one of those guys, Alabama just continues to bring out these guys who run great routes. They're dynamic athletes, come out of high school and make that transition to college pretty quickly. So I don't think he's quite at that level of like an Amari Cooper, but I think Calvin Ridley can kind of do everything you need him to. You know, he can go – he's a deep threat. To me, he's in that mold of like a T.Y. Hilton, deep threat. He's a refined route runner by Jalen Hurts this last year over, with the quarterback play, because Hurts isn't a quarterback in my opinion and should probably be playing running back along with Bo Scarborough. So I like Calvin Ridley a lot. I think he'll be a guy to keep an eye on in the first round next year. Then moving down, Christian Kirk from Texas A&M. I think he's definitely a playmaker. He's a guy that I think he kind of gets used in that Jarvis Landry role at Texas A&M, but I think he's got more of the Odell Beckham Jr. style. I think once if they let him kind of let it loose a little bit more and be more of that playmaker downfield, he can do that. He's kind of built more like Jarvis Landry, but again, like I said, he plays more of that Odell Beckham, even more like that Sterling Shepard style too, kind of that mold. Not the biggest guy, but he can do everything you need him to, and he can definitely help in the run game or in the screen game, excuse me. And then another guy I really like is Dante Pettis from Washington. I've watched him. I think he kind of got overshadowed by John Ross last year. But I think he's definitely a playmaker. I really like he's got long arms, uses his hands well. He's not the biggest guy, not the biggest frame or anything like that, but he finds a way to get the ball and contort his body and, makes contested catches and everything like that. So I'm a big fan of his. And then the last guy I really like that I think is a sleeper that heading into the season is Jester Weah from Pitt. I think he's more of like a Quincy Enunwa for the New York Jets. He's kind of that bigger body guy. He's not the tallest, but, you know, he's deceptively fast and got, you know, really athletic. I really want to see what he does without who was his quarterback this last year? Nathan Peterman. I would like to see what he does this season without him. I think Peterman helped him quite a bit in that offense, but I'm a big fan of Jester Weah, and I think he's a guy that we should definitely keep an eye on. And then a few more names, I think, just to
hold on a second.
My bad. My bad.
Right now, because you just caught someone with Quincy Enunwa, but then he was deceptively fast. How does that work?
I mean that in, like, I think a guy like Weah is going to test better than he might show on tape. Chris Godwin, mold. I don't think many people thought Chris Godwin was going to run a low 4.4. So I'm saying, like, a Jester Weah might surprise people with, you know, his 40 times in some of his testing come the combine next season. So just kind of more like more in that range than I mean, like, you know, not that he's not fast or like that, but you know, it might just sneak up on some people. And then for me, just a couple other names I think that I kind of am excited to start watching, you know, a little bit more of are, you know, the Deion Kane from Clemson. I know he's got that height, weight, speed. You know, Clemson U's kind of turned into wide receiver U. So I'm sure no matter what, really, in my opinion, I think he's going to get overdrafted no matter what happens, just because he's coming from Clemson and he's got that height, weight, and speed. Richie James from Middle Tennessee State. He's a name that's really come on the scene as of late. So he's a guy that I think I really want to get into more, because it sounds like people are kind of giving him a lot of credit. And then James Washington from Oklahoma State. I know JR and I were talking about him earlier, and he's a guy kind of has kind of a one-trick pony in a bit. He's more used as a deep threat, but not really much of a run-after-catch kind of guy that, you know, JR mentioned earlier that we talked about. But he's a guy I want to get into too.
Awesome. Awesome. Great information there, Miles. JR, Jake, anyone that he left out or any takes that you have on the list that Miles gave us?
I like Yinka here. I'm going to hop in. He was kind of overshadowed, obviously, because of some of the weapons. But Paris Campbell from Ohio State. I want to watch more of his tape, obviously, but he's a guy that I started to dig into. And I think pull up.
He definitely benefited real quick, Prince. He's going to benefit a lot from a Noah Brown leaving school too, I think.
Yeah. He's probably going to be one of those 4.4 guys. I mean, he has a decent height, decent weight. But like I said, he definitely was surrounded around quite a few weapons, obviously, being at Ohio State. But I think you can start to see him shine a little bit more maybe coming this year.
Jake, JR, what you guys thinking?
I think Miles hit on a bunch of those high-end names. I'm not going to dive too deep, but just to name a couple other ones, Auden Tate out of Florida State is he's rising up the Devy ranks in dynasty circles. He again is a height, weight, speed type of guy. He hasn't shown a lot at Florida State, but people are expecting him to have a big season this year. Going down the list, Equanimeous St. Brown out of Notre Dame. He's a lanky, tall, speedy type of receiver. A lot of people think he's gonna blow up and be at least a first or second round pick next year.
I like him a lot, but I couldn't say his name, so I didn't.
Yeah, I just started and hoped it came out well. And then the other guy I like is Juwan Jennings out of Tennessee. He's had some off the field concerns. He's feisty. I haven't dove too deep into his off the field concerns, but I've heard he's had some issues. But he's feisty and I like him. And, I don't know if he will have the metrics to go high in the draft, but I like him as a player. So that's just a few other names to throw out there.
So you guys named some really good names, and I feel like we like have the all name team with this wide receiver group. We have a Equanimeous St. Brown, and we have a Deebo Samuel from South Carolina. We actually have a Deebo in this draft. So I just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, Deebo better be good. Well, I mean, With as much as you guys already know about next year's draft, I feel like I'm at a bit of a disadvantage with this league that we're about to kick off. But we'll figure things out. I guess before we get you out of here, Jake, do you have any upcoming articles, any podcast appearances, anything that we should be aware of that you have coming down the pipe?
Yeah, actually, I haven't been writing lately because I lost my laptop a couple months ago, and I just got a new one. So I got a couple articles that I'm working on at DynastyFootballFactory.com. I'm a Devi and Dynasty writer there, so I'll have some articles coming out there. Two nights ago, I was on the Grab Bag Fantasy podcast, and then previously I was on the RB Scout podcast, and a few weeks ago I was on the Dynasty Life podcast. So I'm new to the whole podcast thing, but I think I like talking more than I like writing, so I think I could get into it. And I've been with you guys for a while now, so you know what? I appreciate you guys having me up in to do it again.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for educating us here. And we're always down to talk a little bit of football. And we know JR and Miles will sit here and talk tape with you for as long as we will let them on the podcast. So thanks for coming out, man.
Awesome. Looking forward to starting this fantasy league, guys.
All right, man.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
See you, man.
See you, Jake.
All right. And that was our interview with Jake Anderson from the Dynasty Football Factory. And now that we have our man, Saxy Prince, back in the fold, we got some things we need to talk about, y'all. Because, you know, our man Yinka has been out here putting out articles steady with his new gig over here at the Daily Norseman. You know, getting it done. But he put out some slanderous material today that we need to discuss.
We do need to discuss it.
So, Yinka.
Yes, sir.
Even though I would hope that everyone listening right now would have already read your article, but for those who maybe are, you know, they're a little bit slow on the uptake or haven't seen it yet, or maybe we're planning on reading it over the weekend, let us know about this article that you just dropped for Daily Norseman, and then we can have a conversation.
Yeah, I channeled my inner Beyonce, and I tried to get the Vikings in formation. I took three specific areas of struggle for the Vikings past season, and I just kind of gave ideal personnel groupings and stuff. I think I did first down, just because we struggled on first down, generating any sort of yards. I did third and long, just because first down was so horrid. We found ourselves in third and long. And then I also obviously looked at goal line situations and one of my kind of my ideal personnels for that. So as far as, we can just kind of hit the pitchfork part of all this, where everybody's probably going to come after me, is I took off Stephon Diggs on goal line situations. And I know that's going to anger a lot of people.
Not everybody.
No, my mentality as far as Stephon Diggs, obviously, in my opinion, he's arguably and easily our best wide receiver. But as I was kind of doing some of my research, I was noticing, and also through my tape, I was noticing Stephon Diggs, as good as he is through the 20s, he's not scoring very much. So I kind of just looked at, you know, what are some of the conversion rates and the touchdown ratios for some of them. Kyle Rudolph had probably the best, or no, Kyle Rudolph had the second best after Adam Thielen in the red zone. Thielen on 10 targets in the red zone scored 3 times. Kyle Rudolph on 24 targets, I believe it was, scored 5 times. And then Stephon Diggs only scored once in the red zone on 10 targets. So, I kind of had to make essentially a business decision as far as, you know, look at who's performing the best when we get into the red zone. And I kind of changed the matchings based off that. Took Stephon Diggs out, inserted Thielen, also inserted Laquon Treadwell. Put in Bucky Hodges, mostly because as far as conversion rates and stuff, having, you know, the two tight end sets as well as the, having two tight end sets, like the yards per attempt, I believe, was 8.2. So depending on where you're at in the red zone, I definitely wanted to be able to have the flexibility to push the ball a little bit and, you know, have different skill sets on the field at the same time. And obviously, schematically, I know that Diggs, you know, at times he suffered from what we were trying to do with him because he became very much a yards after catch kind of guy. But yeah, I just decided to leave Diggs out for goal line situations.
Yeah, and so I know that when you put your article out, and it's a great read. If you haven't done it already, you definitely should check it out. It's easy to digest, even though Yinka is given a lot of stats and a lot of technical football stuff in there. It's a good, quick read that gives you some good things to think about. And I guess my issue with Diggs, if we're saying he's our best wide receiver, I guess I have an issue with taking your best player at a position off the field in what we would consider to be one of the most important areas of the field, which is in the red zone where you're looking to score. Diggs is an A-plus route runner. And I guess the issue that I had was, like we think about red zone threat, generally speaking, when most football fans are thinking about a red zone threat, they're thinking about a big body guy who can go up over top of a DB and catch, you know, those back end zone fades and things like that. But as we started, it was actually funny that you put your article out and then a fantasy guy actually started tweeting the most efficient and inefficient players in the red zone. And the most inefficient guys in the red zone were the big guys. And the most efficient guys in the red zone were either tight ends or small receivers. Because the small receivers, they weren't just relying on athleticism to get them open. Coaches were forced to use scheme to get them open. So you had a guy like Doug Baldwin, who his conversion rate in the red zone for touchdowns was almost 40% last year, right? Like, yeah. And so I guess that was my issue with taking a Diggs off the field for someone who is not as good of a wide receiver. Like, Treadwell is bigger than Diggs, but at this point, there's no way that we can say that Treadwell is a better wide receiver than Stephon Diggs. So you're taking a better wide receiver off for, we'll say five, so Miles doesn't come yell at me, a less proven wide receiver. And I almost feel like when you just put a bunch of big guys out there, it takes the coach off the hook because now, you know, yeah, let me just throw it up to a Bucky Hodges or throw it up to a Laquon Treadwell and hope something happens versus maybe let me see if I can design a play to get someone open so we can throw it into the end zone and score. Like, New England does or Seattle does or any of these teams that are actually good in the red zone do, because really all of our players were bad in the red zone last year.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree. And giving that mentality, and I obviously put it some of it on scheme, I just kind of assumed that we might still be as bad being creative in the red zone with a guy like Stephon Diggs, who honestly, and if Stephon Diggs in, you know, offenses that are able to scheme players like him into space and he's able to score, absolutely Stephon Diggs would be on the field. But I think given the fact that what I've seen North Turner and Shermer kind of do, I was like, okay, well, based on what we've kind of been accustomed to experience, not to say that it shouldn't improve, but just given that, you know, what he might want to do, my mentality was never the jump ball. I've never really been a huge fan of the jump ball back corner fade. I just think that it's not a huge percentage throw. But I guess I was more considering that, you know, obviously because football, especially in the red zone, you know, you really have to kind of create your own space and be able to play in traffic. You're not really having that much room to be able to do it. So having a Kyle Rudolph on the field that, you know, who, again, his touchdown rate is still bad, but better than majority of the other people on the team. Bringing in Bucky Hodges because, you know, if you do ever want to throw the jump ball, he definitely has the athleticism to do it. Adam Thielen, just because he has found ways to score despite how bad schematically things were in the red zone last year. And then Treadwell, just because, I mean, Treadwell doesn't have the athleticism of a Stephon Diggs. Treadwell has always had to rely on kind of being that bully, being able to box guys out, being able to use, being able to play with a guy really on his hip and still being able to make plays off that. So that was my, mostly my mentality as far as it. Y'all feel free, rip it apart. It's fine.
No, that to touch on that last part you just said about like a guy like Treadwell, I think, you know, can be used for a guy like Kyle Rudolph or Bucky Hodges or even, you know, Michael Floyd. The bigger body guys are the guys that box out the smaller players, especially like a Kyle Rudolph, Bucky Hodges, you know, those guys are 6'6" plus. Guys, you know, and that are sub 6 or, you know, right in that 6 foot range, and basically need to box out the. So that's kind of the bigger mentality for me of bringing those kind of guys in the red zone, because you're getting those, you know, those automatic mismatches where all a guy like Kyle Rudolph needs to do is just box out the guy in front of him who's, you know, more than likely smaller than him. So that's just kind of my mentality for it. I do agree with what Jason's saying with, you know, Stephon Diggs, because he is that. I don't know if he's your. I don't know if you could count him as like your prototypical, or even if he can become that, you know, that true number one wide receiver this team needs. But you can scheme him into space and scheme him in the red zone to make plays, which I think to both your points, we haven't seen. So I think the idea of kind of, are they going to start implementing that and allow Diggs to kind of be that playmaker in the red zone that he can be, is yet to be seen.
Yeah, Jay, yeah, where are you at with everything? Because you've been kind of silent in this conversation. What are your thoughts on kind of what we should be doing in the red zone? So, you know, Prince had us in that, I think it was two tight end, two wide receivers with Latin Murray in the backfield and Sam Bradford. What are your thoughts about us kind of going at things that way and pulling like a Diggs off the field when we get in the red zone?
I think it just kind of depends on exactly where you are in the red zone. We all know the red zone is 20 and in. But, I mean, if you're in the 5 and in, you really don't want a guy like Diggs on the field just because it's kind of hard to get those smaller guys the ball in that tight space like that. You want those bigger body guys that can box out some guys like Miles mentioned earlier. So you want a guy like Kyle Rudolph, Treadwell, Michael Floyd, and a Bucky Hodges, so to speak, in that area of the field just because it's really easier to get them the ball in those situations. With smaller guys, you can't really throw the ball up, throw jump balls up to them in those situations. You have to make the most famous Green Bay Packer pick plays, so to speak, plays like that. So I'm in favor of those two tight end sets with those two bigger wide receivers on the outside.
Y'all gonna force me to put a bunch of numbers in the show notes because you're all wrong. The tight ends, yes, keep them out there. Let them do their thing. Tight ends, they tend to be that mismatch that Miles was referring to right there. Really, that all of you have been referring to. But, you know, folks are looking at these things, and the little guys are getting open in the red zone with greater efficiency than them big guys. We see the highlights of the big guys.
But how are they getting open is the question. Like what Jared said, is like the big plays and the, you know, the offensive coordinators are getting creative, but how is it working? You know what I'm saying? So like,
yes, as long as it's working, it's working.
Right.
Like,
but right
now, the rules favor those guys right now. So you can't really put hands on them. So, and if the refs aren't calling the picks, like,
so
it's an easier, safer throw, unless you're the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, to throw that slant route with the guy coming inside. I mean, that's a much higher percentage throw than throwing it to the back corner and hoping that a person with Treadwell's vertical leap is going to go up over an NFL cornerback and bring it in for a touchdown.
Why you got to do that?
Because I love to get you going, Miles.
So 5 and in, you're on the 5-yard line. Who would you rather have, Julio Jones and Antonio Brown on the outside?
We don't have either. I would say.
I'm just saying in general.
I would rather have
answer the question.
I mean, I take Julio Jones over just about anybody, except for maybe AJ Green. But those guys are exceptions. And I see you shaking your head. I think AJ has better hands than Julio Jones. So.
Ooh, hot take.
It's not a hot take.
AJ Green in many of those situations. Julio's obviously a freak, but AJ has better hands. So I might go AJ Green in that situation. Yes, those guys, if I can find a guy that's one of them, sure. But what I'm saying in this situation, I'm not just going to take Antonio Brown off the field because I have a big guy on my bench, which is what I feel like we're doing right here. We have, you know, a poor man's Antonio Brown, potentially, and a Stephon Diggs that were taken off the field to replace him with a guy that, as of right now, all we know about him is that he's bigger. Because we certainly don't know anything about him as, in terms of being productive at the NFL level. And so that's okay. My objection with it is okay. Antonio Brown is successful in the red zone.
Right. Well, what if it's Michael Floyd instead of Laquon Treadwell, you know, or, you know, how about that? Like, does that change your perception of it, though? Like,
I mean,
Michael Floyd instead of Laquon Treadwell.
But Diggs is still better than Michael Floyd. And I feel like he'd be more likely to either get open, or if it's Michael Floyd, we're talking about catch the ball when it comes to him. You know, like, I don't know. Same thing with, like, Bucky Hodges. Again, like, I love the potential of the guy. But the one thing that JR did mention a lot when we were talking about him in the draft is his hands aren't really the most consistent thing. So, yes, he has the athleticism. Yes, he can go up. But until he showcases that he's able to be better, again, give me Diggs and a pick play over Bucky, who might be able to jump over everybody, who's probably going to drop the ball when somebody hits him, you know? I don't know. That's where I'm at with it.
Well, so yeah. one example of that, of, I think the one touchdown Diggs had in the red zone was against the Green Bay Packers. In Lambeau, it was kind of when the game was out of reach, but he ran the kind of sail route to the corner, the back of the end zone. You kind of had him matched up one-on-one, and whoever's on the outside, probably Adam Thielen, takes his guy in to kind of force the one-on-one situation. Are those the kind of plays you're talking about then? Like, you just want to see it on a more consistent basis?
I just think that if you get Stephon Diggs isolated against most DBs in the league with space to work with, Diggs will be able to get open, right? I feel like more often than not, Diggs can win. And if we put the ball out there, I mean, he's shown that he'll go get it. So I don't know. I think he's our best guy. So I would rather, you know, put it in his hands in that situation, or make Big Sherm, you know, earn his money and come up with some ways to beat what the defense is doing. So we're not just relying like we were back in the North days, where like the receiver has to beat the DB one-on-one and just go make a play. You know, let the offensive coordinator do some work and help some guys make plays, especially in the red zone.
The world famous double cross Mike Wallace running across the field. Throw it up.
That was literally the only red zone play that
our one red zone pass play.
But it worked. I don't like when they did run it, it worked.
Twice. It's a very popular play.
It's our, what is it?
Just a rub route.
Run Adrian Peterson up the middle once.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, Adrian's hurt. Okay, run Matt Asiata up once. Again. Okay, and then we're gonna run the crossing route and try to get the guy on the other side.
Yeah, we had three red zone plays with North Turner. It was a bunch set with Kyle Rudolph over the middle, the crossing routes, and Adrian Peterson up the middle. That was it.
Yeah, man. And then Prince. So the other thing I was giving you grief about, because we kind of I guess it's two things. Well, Diggs in the slot, and then Jarius Wright. So I know JR had this conversation on Twitter when we were talking about deep threats pre-draft. And I feel like I know that you know that Adam Thielen and Sam Bradford were the NFL's, I think, best connection on deep routes last year. And you want to take the Vikings' best deep threat weapon off the field to replace him with Jarius Wright. You're gonna need to explain. You got to explain yourself on that one, my man.
Yeah, man. Obviously, we suffered on when I was going through stats and stuff, and I was trying to figure out, well, where are the Vikings obviously lacking? One of the things that I found was, you know, our third down efficiency started to drop. So in 2016, we had on third down the average we had was about 7.4 yards. To get it, and obviously the conversion rate wasn't great. I think it was about 38%. And then our average yards in that time was 5.94 yards. You know, so I was like, okay, well, we're obviously not even matching our, you know, third down to go, you know, average. What happened? So I went back to 2015 to see what was going on there. So our average third down per yards was 7.59, and we actually converted I forget the percentage, but our average yards was 7.85. So I was like, okay, we were actually doing fairly well converting on third and long in 2015 than we were in 2016. We were actually doing very poorly. So I went back and I looked at, okay, well, who was typically on the field during that time? In 2015, I believe it was Jarius Wright was one of them. Diggs started to become another one of them. I think Adam Thielen started to see more time. And then there was Mike Wallace. Obviously not Mike Wallace. So it really was between three guys. So it was between Jarius Wright, Adam Thielen, and Stephon Diggs. Between Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen converted much better. I think he was at 11 yards, averaged about 11 yards on third downs. And then I was just like, okay, well, you know, Adam Thielen has to be that guy. And then I found my man, Jarius Wright. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna be objective here. If he's not doing as well as Thielen was, I'm obviously gonna take him off. And Jarius had 13.8, I think it was. And I was just like, well, I have to go with the guy who, you know, he didn't have as many, he didn't produce as well on third downs last year, but I went with more career. And I made the decision to go with Jarius Wright, who, yes, has lost some top end speed, but has shown to be quite consistent on third downs.
And so that was real quick, just to correct the record, since I asked for receipts on Twitter today and you sent them to me, and you have Jarius Wright's career average on third down at 15.6.
15.6 is what it is.
13.6.
That's what it is. Yeah, my bad. Jarius Wright is obviously converting way better on third downs career-wise. Like I said, he did drop quite a bit in last year. Obviously that could be affected a little bit by the time that he was getting on the field, but at the same time, he wasn't producing nearly as well. But I just, like I said, I just looked at their careers, and Jarius Wright seemed to be the guy that was producing more consistently at a higher level, especially how often we were in third down. So I kind of correlated to that success that we were having on third downs in 2015. So that's why I chose my man, Jarius.
J.R. Miles, what you guys got to think about that?
I mean, I'm probably not taking Adam Thielen off the field for Jarius right at this point in their stages of the career, especially in the set that Prince had, which was two wide receivers, a tight end, and two running backs. So I don't think Jarius Wright's beating a lot of people one-on-one anymore, personally, just from, you know, what I've seen. Maybe he's going to prove us all wrong and flash this year again, but I'm not taking him off the field for Adam Thielen for probably any reason.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's just something about Jarius Wright on third down. It's kind of like magic. And it's like he really was Teddy's security blanket on third down in 2015. But, of course, he disappeared last year. He didn't really play a ton. But I really don't know if he will make the team this year or not. I really don't know. I hope he does. I don't know if he will or not. But it'll be interesting to see how they do use him if he does end up making this team this year. Is he more of a primarily third down guy, or will he be mixed in a lot in the slot? So it'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely. And Prince, keep these articles coming, because what I will say is, even though I might not necessarily agree with everything that you put out there, especially with, you know, the relegation of my man Diggs to the slot or the bench, or
Diggs, I'm just trying to get Diggs on the bench. Like, that's really what I want.
Hey, don't do that, man. You turned me into Miles talking about Treadwell over here. Don't be disrespecting Mr. Diggs like that.
I'll put some respect on his name.
Keep these articles coming, man. They give us a lot to think about, a lot to talk about. Yeah, but that's pretty much, I think we covered everything we were supposed to cover tonight. I guess you just put something out, Prince. I guess, do you have anything else kind of on deck for us at Daily Norseman? I know you were talking about maybe writing something about Mike Zimmer.
I think I have two articles. I can't even remember what I wrote the other one. But the one that I think I'll probably publish tomorrow is actually about Mike Zimmer. I've been wanting to write it for a while. We've kind of talked about it too, and he even talked about it today, surprisingly, was just his role as our head coach. You know, what we need to see from Mike Zimmer. And we said it before, I kind of say, hey, Mike Zimmer should become the CEO. And I even say the CEO, you know, because he needs to more oversee the operations that are on the field, because obviously he's a fantastic coach. He's a great game planner. He's very creative and very able to, he's able to adjust, you know, either at halftime or just, you know, for teams that, you know, he may have gotten beat before. I kind of give a few, current, coaches that are Mike Zimmer is deficient in. And I think that was to be on both sides of the ball, as well as,
I'm going to need to run that take back, because for two of the key points that you made there, it just you completely froze up. Like you're doing right now.
Okay, let me just start from the beginning. I just took off the Wi-Fi because it was being spotty. So just as far as the article of Mike Zimmer becoming the CEO, I just kind of put forth a few coaches, a few scenarios where Mike Zimmer wasn't very good, or even if he made a decision that wasn't a great decision, it worked out for him. But I put forth specifically two coaches who should kind of take a step forward to help in the areas that he is deficient, just because Mike's a really good head coach. He's good at coaching, specific techniques, all that stuff, and he's great at game planning. He's very creative. If you've ever noticed a game with Zimmer, if he faces a team the second time, he never he usually looks better. If he gets beat the first time, he usually doesn't look as bad the second time around. So I kind of give a few coaches that I feel should take a step forward, as well as allowing Zimmer to be on both sides of the ball a lot more so, because I do want to see him have a little bit more say in the offense, in terms of, just what he's going to say and how he's going to, you can see kind of that Mike Zimmer effect even in our offense. So,
awesome, Miles, JR, you guys have anything on deck? Miles, we know you're getting married.
No comment.
JR, how about you, man?
No, man, still just getting through 2018 prospects right now, just grinding away with the tape.
Nice. And nothing for me right now, trying to get this new computer actually set up and this office set up appropriately so that we can actually produce these podcasts the way that they should be produced with this equipment that my father was nice enough to gift me a couple months ago. So
are we flying up and we recording live, or?
Yeah, soon. So I won't have to spend as much time in post-production. So that's what's going to take up my time over this coming weekend, is trying to figure out how to do that. But, if you're still with us at this point, thank you for staying tuned for another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We should do an after show where Prince lets you know where he is during the parts of the show where he's not talking. But my name is Jason Brown. Thank you for listening. And I'm here with JR, Miles Gorham, and as always, the Sexy Prince. Have a good night, y'all.